This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's not mess around. We're here, we're live. It's Tuesday morning. I feel like I've got so much stuff I have to do. You know when you've got a long checklist of stuff you have to do?
Oh, do you get panicky?
Well, I just get anxious when I haven't got a whole lot of stuff sorted out. Like, I've got to... It's all dumb stuff, like get a car serviced and go for a haircut. I've got to buy clothes. I haven't bought new clothes for... I don't want to exaggerate here. And I mean, like, you go and buy, like, stock standard stuff. I'm not talking about shopping for that perfect pair or whatever.
No, just the basics.
Yeah. Like T-shirts and... Especially for winter coming up, I've got to get a whole lot of crap there. And
well, that's what's happened now. The weather's changed, mm-hmm. and you're digging into your wintry things, and you're thinking,
I've got shit.
Oh, I've got to wear this again from last year.
I've got absolute shit here. I've got this is terrible. So I have to go and restock, make sure I've got everything I need. And, you know, my parents said to me, you know, one day you will own a house. I thought, that's a thing to strive for. So now I own a house, and all it does is give me headaches. All it does is give me nightmares. I just got to look after this damn thing, and then this happens, and then the pool leaks, and then the roof needs this, and then the... You know how it goes. So you end up... You're not in love with the idea anymore, and you think... I've got a friend, for example, who... He and his whole family moved into a hotel.
What?
He did a deal. Yeah, listen to this. He did a deal with a hotel... Booked it for, I think he booked it for a year. He said, I'm gonna stay in one of these self-catering type apartments in the hotel. Mm. You know, a lot of the...
Where it's
the
got hotel. A kitchen and
yeah,
things
correct.
Like that.
Yeah, and it's him and his wife and his two kids. I don't know how they're going to manage, but it seems they're doing fine. And he pays them quite a low rental because really they've got him for a year. So they gave him a very good price.
Yeah, because they've got guaranteed occupation.
Right. He doesn't own a property. He doesn't own a car because he Ubers everywhere. So he's living this world of modern technology and modern convenience. And it's costing him very much less than it would have cost him to own a house and own a car and, you know, all those things that we all think are so important that we all spend most of our money on.
Yeah.
Now, he seems to be having a good time. I mean, I haven't checked in with him in the last month or two, but last time I spoke to him, he was great.
I don't know if that would work for me.
As long as he's saving something somewhere, because there is no benefit, and especially you say he's got kids, of selling a home or leaving a home to someone.
No, he's definitely saving. He's definitely putting that money away that he would have wasted on all this stuff, right?
But
it's just I look at this and I think, well, maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe we're all idiots because we're doing the same old thing. And it's costing us a fortune.
And so much in interest.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about it a few weeks ago, going, okay, you know, 4 and carry the 4 and minus the 1.
Yeah.
And I realized, though, you actually can't put a price to convenience. So I was thinking, if I were to let my car go, and be one of those people who Ubers everywhere, you now have to think consciously about your day and structure it properly because you don't want to have unnecessary trips like, oh, I forgot my charger at home. Now I have to go home.
Yeah.
And,
won't that make you more conscientious?
But it's also things like I have... After 2 meetings, I then have an event to go to and I just need to carry a shirt around, you know, a change of shirts. Now I have to carry an extra bag and carry it throughout the day as opposed to just leaving it in the car. It will stay nice and fresh there. You know, it's little things like that.
Groceries.
Yeah.
Dogs. My dog goes everywhere with me.
And so how do you equate that in terms of the greater scheme of things and your installments, but versus convenience?
Yeah, well, this is what I'm trying to figure out, right? There's got to be some happy medium where you can have a bit of both because owning a car or two in a family is just unnecessary unless you travel long distances. And look, I do. So to Uber for me, and I tried it for a week and it almost like broke the bank.
Because I
do live far from work and I do a lot of, not a long distance, but, you know, Pretoria to Johannesburg is not exactly around the corner.
Mm.
I mean, people in Cape Town don't go that far for birthday parties.
Oh, for nothing, no.
So you know, it's in Cape Town, for example, over the weekend, I didn't need a car because you just Uber everywhere.
And yeah,
I wonder how the rental car companies are doing in places like Cape Town, because I reckon that their business is thinned out quite considerably.
Well, the only thing is with rentals in Cape Town is they'll probably be quite consistent because of you know, renting cars from airports where you need baggage space and things like that.
Yeah, but you can do that in Ubers now. You can get an Uber van, for example, and you can fit everything in there. I'm just saying it's not the solution to all our problems, but it certainly is interesting and helpful.
Mm. Now, anyway. I feel like we're going to change our tune pretty soon.
You think we're going to go backwards, or do you think we're going to go into a different direction?
No, we're going to move into this new direction of, you know, owning less and using on-demand services. But for now, I still prefer convenience.
I think it also depends on your upbringing and what you value. You know, you may have been brought up by parents who think that having assets is important, who know that a car is a liability. Rather put your money into property. Mm-hmm. It's important to own a home for stability. Mm. Property is a good investment.
Well, this is kind of what I was getting at earlier, is that the stuff we think is important, the things that we end up saving our whole lives for, and maybe it's not, you know?
Right.
Maybe that's the stuff that we shouldn't be wasting our time with. You get an idea?
Like, I have a friend who is great financially and very financially savvy, but doesn't do things conventionally. So, for example, she doesn't have a pension fund. She actually takes all of her money every now and then and just invests it in different businesses.
Mm-hmm.
It's very risky.
But I think that might be clever.
I want to cry every single time she goes, I'll give that a try. But she was one of the first people to give crypto a try in our circle. She's now bought a random piece of land somewhere in Durban to just say, okay, well, I'll sell it again in 3 years' time, but it will appreciate more than if the money was just sitting in a pension fund somewhere. So I guess you just find what works for you, really.
Right.
Mm.
Okay. That's a heavy way to start the day.
We've got our brains moving this
finances
morning.
Finances and, you know, what we should be spending our money on. And
can I talk about the opposite of money, which is not spending money?
Yeah, why? What's happening?
So, Gareth, you know this. We got the office talking last week because I was stuck in a bit of a pickle as I was deciding what to do for a friend of mine.
Oh, right. This is good. Yeah. I think this is a very valid point. A lot of people could probably add advice from.
There's a line somewhere advice here. About, let's find it out. So I went to an event last week, Leanne, and I got an amazing goodie bag. And part of the goodie bag was this gorgeous makeup kit. You know, like tons of things, brushes and powders and different eyeshadows. It really was a very fancy makeup kit. Mm. And I was thinking about the birthday party that I had to go to over the weekend for a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, well.
Regift.
There we go. And it's a great regift solution.
Right, cool.
But the only problem was the fact that this friend of mine actually knew that I went to this event. And on top of that, would know that I got it for free at the event.
Okay, but explain. It's a really nice
It really
gift.
Is
I mean,
nice.
It's like a Beyonce makeup kit type thing.
Yeah, Beyonce's makeup artist is in the country last week, and we went to that launch, and he now has a new makeup range that's launched in the country.
No, I mean, you may have got it for free, but in essence, it wasn't for free. You got it because you've spent many years building up your name and your reputation. That's why you were invited to this event.
Damn it, Leanne, why weren't you here last week to give me that?
You know, you've spent time and effort on that. Well, and you would never have got that makeup kit if you hadn't have. So essentially, it's not for free.
The principle, though, and the question was, do I re-gift shamelessly? Or do I give it to her and explain, like, oh, well, you do know I got it for free, but the thought is still there.
No, the spin is to say to her, you know what? I was at this event, and I got this, and I immediately thought of you, And I just thought, this is the perfect gift for you. And even though I was going to buy you something else, this is much better.
Yes. Mm,
and then she'll go, oh, my God. She'll go, you're such a thoughtful, wonderful human being. And, of course, she's going to love the present because the present's great quality. You know, it's an impressive thing. Uh-huh. And you're not going to use it, so you don't need to feel bad. You're giving it away. It's not as if you took this thing with bad intentions, because someone who really appreciates it's going to get it. Everybody's happy.
I did feel bad because I thought I would come off cheap. But I got a message from her last night. She's like, oh, my goodness, thank you for the gift. I was like, yeah.
There you go.
I might come off as a cheap friend, but I just think it's, you know, killing two birds with one stone. I don't need this. I needed to get her gift in any case for her birthday, and so I did.
And it's a fabulous gift.
Would you feel offended if your friend re-gifted you something and you knew it was a re-gift?
No. If people, and I get lots of freebies, media people, we usually do, you get invited to everything, people send you, I got the most outrageous gift the other day from a company, it's like a credit card company, and they were doing they've produced a song or a thing, I don't even know what it is, it's like a little instrumental thing, but they send a box, right, this velvet box, and it's inside there's a pair of Beats headphones, which are not cheap, and they've got a little USB, which is like made for them. It's like this beautifully style. It looks like no other USB I've ever seen in my life, and there's a 20-second song, effectively, that they've had produced at some really expensive studio in L.A., and this is their theme music, and they want you to hear it on these headphones. They want you to receive it in this beautiful box. I mean, it's an outrageous gift. I mean, it must have cost them in excess of 2,000-3,000, maybe even more.
Yeah.
A person that they sent this to. And most of the gifts I get, I give away, because I don't need stuff.
You know,
I don't want clutter.
Right.
These PR companies and their respective brands, they understand that you're going to give them away as well. And that's okay, because you're still...
You're passing on the...
Spreading awareness and spreading use of the brand.
So I did give this away. I gave away the headphones to somebody, and I kept the USB because those are always useful.
Yeah.
But it was just... I mean, I don't know what it did for their brand. I'm really not sure. And I think a lot of people don't mind whether a freebie comes in. You know, I mean, we've got a South African population here who they'll vote for a party just because of a free T-shirt.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
So we're a nation of freebie people. We like freebies, and why the hell not? So you give away something like that, you essentially are re-gifting it. Nothing wrong. And you could make that other person who didn't get to be invited to Beyoncé's makeup artist's launch, you could make her year. Because that's about the closest she'll ever get to Beyoncé, you know?
I guess I just also felt bad because of the occasion. You know, it's a birthday. It's not just that I went to this event and thought, oh, here you go. It was her birthday. But I'm glad she liked it. Yeah.
All right, before we get into the news, and we've got quite a lot to do today, we've also got our Smart Driving with Pig Spotter feature, which is coming up a bit later. I'm going to talk to Oliver Wright about... This is really, really interesting. We're going to talk about what happens. He's the CEO of the South African Private Ambulance and Emergency Services Association. So he knows a lot of stuff that we have questions, and I think he'll help us to answer them. But before we get into any of that, emails. So I got this one from Bronwyn. She says, Gareth, I had to stop listening yesterday. I cannot bear the narrow-mindedness of that woman, Tina.
Oh, dear.
So Tina's this woman who and listen, bless her, she's trying to make a difference. You know, we can criticize her and say she's narrow-minded, but her intention is, I think, fairly pure. Maybe it just doesn't manifest itself in the way that the rest of us find acceptable. So Tina is this activist. She started a group called 1,000 Women or whatever, and they are trying to get a game banned. It's an awful, obnoxious game called Rape Day, which is full of violence and all kinds of things that we probably should not be promoting in society. And I don't think there are a lot of people who would support the promotion of those ideas. But she's trying to get this game banned. Anyway, so Tina gets on the air with me yesterday. And all she's interested in is getting it banned. Like, she doesn't understand, first of all, that banning something, even if you're the government, doesn't get rid of it. People find a way of finding it.
No, the only country any good at banning anything is North Korea.
Right, because they're sealed off from the rest of the world and they don't have the internet.
You know, Tina and her organization also admit that the game's already on illegal sites.
Yeah, you can find it if you want to. And by the way, I think there are a lot of discussions that this has opened up that we might want to get into, and certainly not all of them today. But one of those discussions is that young men are fiercely competitive. They love playing games. Games have overwhelmingly positive results for a lot of young men because it helps them to develop their competitive streak. It helps them to develop strategy and tactics and all of these things because the games have – you have to try and win. Mm-hmm. And you have to try and – and especially if it's an online or multiplayer game, you have to think of what the possible outcomes might be where there are actual people playing with you.
Mm.
So it has real-world application. And there have been a lot of studies recently by, among others, independent scientists who've looked at behavior around games. Christina Hoff Summers is one of the people who pops into my mind, who've come up as big supporters of games, even violent games, even first-person shooter games, because you're not going to breed this out of men in one generation, right? Men have for thousands of years, we've found meaning in protecting the family, the tribe, the
hunting,
nation.
Using weapons.
I mean, every single generation of my ancestors, going back as far as I can go in the male line, have all been at war. All of them.
Hmm.
I'm the first male generation of my family in recorded history that I can find who hasn't had to fight a war, put on a uniform. So there's a part of all young men that is fiercely competitive, that is aggressive, that wants to find an outlet for that. And games are a safe way for that to happen, where it doesn't necessarily hurt people in the real world. There is no evidence, zero. People have been saying for years, video games make young men dangerous, they make young men aggressive and violent and all of these things. There's no evidence. None. People who are violent and aggressive are going to be violent and aggressive with or without the game. And people who are not will not, regardless of whether they play the game or not. So as awful and egregious as this game is, and nobody seems to like it, including me, you can't just ban these things without understanding the underlying psychology. So, to get back to the email from Bronwyn, she said, she likes the sound of her own voice. This is that the woman we spoke to yesterday. And I felt sorry for you trying to get a word in edgeways. There's no point even trying to reason with a person like her. Again, I've got to disagree, Bronwyn. I think she's a thoughtful person who's trying her best to make a difference. I assume she has good intentions. I'm not assuming she's a horrible person. I think you've got to do that if you're going to have an honest conversation with anyone. You can't assume they're a bad person who's got bad ideas and they're trying to do bad things. Otherwise, you can't really treat them as your equal or with respect.
Mm.
So you have to try. And it's the first time I've ever spoken to Tina, so I had to try and I had to be polite, and I hope I was. So she says, I'm not a gamer. My kids are not gamers, but I have friends whose sons are full-on gamers, and they're lovely boys, respectful and decent. Tina reminds me of my grandmother, who used to preach all kinds of religious crap to me as a kid, as well as the fact that all boys are Satans.
That's like when I had my kitchen tea in preparation for my wedding.
Yes.
My gran said, I unwrapped a pair of oven gloves, and she said, oh, you'll need those on honeymoon. And I said, why? She said, in case you have to touch the beastly thing.
Well, so Bronwyn, I'm
Gran.
I love the email, and thank you, because I think we all know guys and girls, by the way, there are lots of girls who play games too, and they derive the same benefits from them as boys would. But there certainly is an argument to be made for that boys are into these things for evolutionary psychological reasons, and that they're not all bad. A lot of these games may look to the untrained eye to be a very violent thing. I mean, I remember my brother used to have a, what are they called?
Xbox?
Console?
Before PlayStation? That, before that even, it was like a...
Game Boy?
A Sony, no, no.
Nintendo.
Whatever it was. And he used to play like Sonic the Hedgehog and stuff. And even there, you have... You try to perfect it. I remember I got into it for a while. It can suck you in, man.
Mm.
You end up playing these games. You don't realize like 4 or 5 hours of your life goes. I used to play these games. You have to collect the rings. You have to kill the bosses. You have to... Oh. You know, it's like a whole thing. And it's so much fun. I don't see how that could be a problem. And if you're playing a dangerous socially... I mean, look, Grand Theft Auto. What's the point of the... You have to steal cars.
Right.
That doesn't mean that those people who play Grand Theft Auto are running around stealing cars. Show me one shred of evidence that that's ever happened.
It's more likely that a car thief played Grand Theft Auto out of interest.
Sure.
Than the other way around.
Yeah, that's the point. Someone who's already stealing cars probably likes the game, but the people who are playing the game don't necessarily have any intention of making that a real world thing. I mean, I watch a movie, that doesn't mean I walk out of the cinema and strap on a cape and try to fly like Superman.
I think, no, I do think the developers of the game wanted to just, to say bluntly, stir shit up. Because
of course.
The mere fact that...
That's how you get attention,
yeah,
right?
They aren't using their real names. We don't know the identities of the developers. They wanted this response.
But you know why they didn't use their real names? Because social justice warriors online would have doxxed them, and then they would have been out of business. So it's clever. These gamers are smarter than the complainers online. Anyway, so we'll leave that behind.
But this is why I'm so certain I hatched out of a disco ball. Everything you're saying just doesn't resonate with me.
No, but you're kind
like
of
evolutionary.
No, you're a different sort of person. So
yeah. Want to play these games? I'm like, nope, not me.
You're competitive in different ways.
No, I don't think. You know, my inclination in conflict is to often step down.
Yeah,
I don't have this need to prove myself and to beat down a point. I go, well, okay, sure, have it your way, and I step down.
I don't know. You're pretty competitive from a career point of view. I don't think you will let someone sneak into your territory. I think you'd smack them to the side.
I'm very determined.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't compete. Competition has never been my thing.
And what about for a guy?
You see, now you can't
What if it came down to who he noticed walking across the room?
Leanne
who
Moore.
Who had the best suit on?
In the words of the great Mariah Carey.
And the most moisturized skin.
In the words of the great Mariah Carey, I'm a press conference. You're a conversation. You can't compare the two.
You see, there's the comparison.
There it is.
Never.
There, he's just revealed himself. All right. Rob sent this to me too. Rob said, I was listening to your podcast with Reverend Kenneth Meshwe, and I really enjoyed it. It's funny, he came up in conversation yesterday. So Kenneth Meshwe is the leader of the ACDP, and we had probably an hour and 10 minutes or whatever it was with him. Really interesting guy. And, you know, so let me read Robin's email, and then we'll get to my comments on this. I'm a pretty hardline atheist, says Robin. And I'm highly opposed to government subsidies and tax exemptions for churches. But the Reverend speaks a lot of sense. This country suffers badly from a lack of morality and accountability, and I believe that those things really matter to him, not just the anti-corruption lip service that the other parties spew with their hands in the till. I agree with you that the small party is the future at a national level. I also believe the Gauteng needs a coalition that doesn't include the ANC. There is just too much ANC rot baked too deep into the system that needs to be flushed out. I was actually starting to feel a little warmth for the ACDP and considered changing my national vote, same with the ZACP, till I read that they're against gay rights, and bam, there is the religious bullshit that I oppose. Especially after his bit about getting overly liberal government out of the home. The thing that impressed me most was said in passing when you asked him about his love of table tennis. He said he wished he could learn from a Chinese Olympic player, and he would pay whatever I could pay. That impressed me. Not pay anything, but pay what he could. As usual, thanks for a great show. Regards, Robin. Yeah, so look, I have this constant ongoing conflict with deeply religious people, and it's not an angry kind of conflict like it used to be once. I mentioned this the other day, that I've just reformed my point of view on this.
Hallelujah.
Amen.
So it used to be like, you're wrong, I'm right, and I'll tell you why. And then,
yeah.
And then you,
you're stupid, I'm not.
And then you batter a religious person with rational, reasonable, sane, enlightenment thinking, and usually they have to resort to the religious texts, and you feel like you've beaten them, and they feel like you're a bully, and it's just ugly. So I've stopped doing that largely. But with someone like Kenneth Meshwe, I get a very sincere feeling that this guy doesn't mean to impose his religion on anyone. Remember, he's a religious guy, but he says these are the things that government should be involved in, the secular things. And of course, when we come to things like gay rights, he believes that the Bible says you know that stuff is a sin. But as I understood it, as much as he says that's a sin, he doesn't say that that should be illegal. There's a difference. What he believes is morally okay is different to what kinds of laws he would create. You can be both. And this is how a lot of religious people square the circle. They say, well, let's say adultery is wrong, right? So that doesn't mean that they send the religious police from house to house stoning adulterers. What it means is that they say, look, our moral code is that this stuff is wrong, but we're not going to impose that moral code on you. Instead, we will just apply the letter of the law, the Constitution, to everyone, which is that you can marry who you want to. That's stuff that government shouldn't be involved in, which I think is perfectly reasonable. I'm certainly not doing... Mm. I'm not trying to do a selling job for the ACDP either, by the way. I mean, we're going to play out an interview with Mangosuthu Buthelezi this week where we talked about the IFP, and there are probably some things that many people would find attractive about the IFP. People who are already voting for them and people who are looking for another place to put their vote. And you could feel the same way about a number of other parties. So I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but I certainly think in terms of good moral leadership, I do think that these smaller parties have a lot less to prove and a lot more that's just genuine and good.
Yeah, it's been interesting to hear their side of things.
Right.
As opposed to the main narrative we have pushed by the, you know, 3-4 big parties.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that they've done all of us a huge disservice, all those big parties, so we should start ignoring them and really making a huge effort to avoid getting into conversations with them.
Right.
I don't think we should include them in our discourse anymore. And I could invite them here, but I'm almost like, well, what am I going to get out of Julius or Musi or even Cyril? I mean, I didn't want to go to that event that they invited me to with Cyril. I mean, I know what they're going to do. They're going to give us platitudes. All right, on to the news. You ready for the 5 things you need to know?
Okay.
Yeah,
all right, so Alex residents have vowed to continue their protest until Ramaphosa and Makura come. Interesting that that's turned to the Gauteng Premier and the President. It was always about Joburg Mayor Herman Mashaba. They were disappointed but not surprised by him refusing to accept their memorandum. They marched from their homes in Alex to the municipal offices in Sandton on Monday.
And it was a rainy, cold day.
Yeah. So there was a shutdown in Alex. It was a bit of a disaster. Jane arrived here. She works with us. She lives in Alex. She said it was an absolute mess. The kids can't go to school. It's weird, like, in these protests, and I understand why people are pissed off, but it's weird that the kids have to get hit with the punishment. The young people who are not involved in politics have to be the ones that bear the brunt of this because they miss out on a day's school.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this. It's kind of crazy and slightly upsetting. Theresa May is going to meet with German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron on Tuesday to argue for a Brexit delay while her ministers hold crisis talks with Labour to try and break the deadlock in London.
Imagine being her and waking up every morning.
What a headache.
And thinking, why do I feel so? Oh, Brexit.
Yeah, it must be like a massive hangover that just doesn't go away, right? So the less said about that, the better, but I thought I'd throw it in. And then this is interesting. The National Prosecuting Authority says that Babes Wadumo and her sister have been fined R1,000 or 30 days in jail each after failing to appear in court on assault charges. You know, when you get when you get charged with some crime and you don't appear in court, that you make it worse for yourself. You can go straight to jail. You know that.
There's only one way, and that's worse.
Someone's got to grab Babes Wadumo and say to her, listen, honey, this is actually serious with real-world consequences. So the Durban Magistrates Court found the singer and her sister guilty of contempt. It comes after they had failed to show up in a Durban court on Friday to face assault charges. Similane and Nondumiso are accused of attacking a woman in the Durban suburb of Umbilo last month. On Friday, the NPA issued a warrant of arrest for the music star after she was a no-show in court. So Babes Wadumo doing herself no favors in terms of whether or not she's making herself available to the court. And then this is interesting, and it links to what we're going to be doing with Pig Spotter in a moment, smart driving. The transport department says the driving license card backlog has been resolved. At least 324,000 South Africans were awaiting their cards at the start of the year. The delay was initially caused by system upgrades and a labor dispute, but the department has said they're now dealing with missing information for those who applied for new cards.
Well, I can put it to the test because I have my temporary driver's license.
Yes.
And I'm due, according to what they said, this week to pick up my new card.
Okay,
so
well,
let's see.
We'll find out by Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. There's some news, and the last story you need to know about this morning. Apparently, we've got a big problem with teachers being absent from the classroom. A recent school monitoring survey has revealed there's an increase in teacher absenteeism in the country. Basic Education Minister Angie Motshekga on Monday released the findings of a 2017 survey. According to the assessment, the number of teachers who are absent from school on a daily basis has increased from 8 to 10%. 1 in 10 teachers just isn't at school today to teach.
Hmm.
And they're at the Shebeen. No, really.
Really?
Yes, this is the problem. And, of course, the unions, sad to, protect these teachers so you can't fire them.
Ooh, sounds like a cushy job.
It's a cushy job for the teachers. Well, who's it bad for? The students.
Yeah, of course.
The learners. Because they go to school and, you know, oh, sorry, there's no maths today. This teacher is at the Shebeen. Can you imagine? Jesus. Anyway, so there we go. That's the five things you need to know today. It is time for us to check in with Pig Spotter Smart Driving with Cliff Pinto. That is Pig Spotter. You can find him on social media. And today we're also going to meet Oliver Wright. We're going to talk a little bit about all the things that can happen on the road that you probably have questions about. Know your rights when you're pulled over in a roadblock, what the situation is with fines after a crash, when you're involved in a hit and run, involved in hijacking. And if you think you can say that you're in the know with road safety, good for you. Most of us actually don't know the first thing. We're kicking off the next episode. This is episode 3 of Smart Driving with Pig Spotter. And it's a 4-part series that will focus on road safety, driver's rights, practical information, and consumer advice. How are you, Pig Spotter?
Very well, and yourself, guys?
Nice to see you, dude.
You too, man. Thank
Good.
You.
I got some really interesting feedback from people after last week that they found it really helpful to know that if, for example, you're trying to get away from a hijacker and you bump and bash your car and you do some serious damage to it in the process of trying to get away, that most insurance companies understand that the deal is there that they will pay. Awesome. Certainly King Price, who bring you this feature, have said that they are absolutely aware of the fact that people's safety and their personal protection of their own integrity and their bodily integrity and making sure that they don't get hijacked, this is paramount.
Absolutely.
And they'll pay out.
And with or without video confirmation as well, which was
that's very interesting.
Massive point to me.
So I think a lot of people benefited from that. This morning we've got Oliver Wright here. Oliver is the CEO of the South African Private Ambulance and Emergency Services Association. So, Oliver, how are you, dude?
Morning. Morning. Nice well, thanks. You. Yes, and you.
It's not an easy job that you have.
Not an easy job for a number of people that are involved as first responders, whether they be paramedics, policemen or women, fire department employees. It's a tough space to be in.
First responders. These are the people who have to arrive on the scene and make sense of it and make sure that everything goes as well as possible from there on in.
Well, we hope so, yes. First responders being a nice all-encompassing phrase for anybody that's involved in the emergency services.
We've also got Vaynant van Vieren here from King Price, and nice to see you, Vaynant. So you're going to give us some info and some input as well from the point of view of, you know, what happens in many of these situations with insurance.
Yes.
So, where do we begin, Cliff? What do you want to ask first and foremost?
Well, obviously, I think from the very first perspective, Mr. Oliver, from the ambulance industry perspective, if someone is injured in like a car crash, what's the very first thing that they should do?
We always look at safety. So if you are coming across a motor vehicle accident or you yourself are involved in a motor vehicle accident, one of the most important things to do is to make sure that there's not what we refer to as a secondary accident. So you want to ensure that other road users are aware that there's an accident ahead of you. So every car these days has to be fitted with a warning triangle. Put your warning triangle out. Put it at least 100 meters before the accident so that people have time to slow down. Rope in bystanders to help you. Get someone to walk 500 meters, a kilometer up the road if you're on the highway. Flag down traffic. Just so that you're not injured while you are waiting for emergency services to arrive. Or if there are people that are injured, that their injuries are not made any worse by being involved in a secondary accident.
Yes, obviously, also, you can't exactly move the patient who's stuck inside a car unless, obviously, the car's going to explode or something.
Right. So there's the common misconception about the infamous explosion, and unfortunately something that's really perpetuated by Hollywood more than anything else.
Yeah.
Majority of cars these days are extremely safe. I personally have never seen a vehicle explode. While in limited instances, some vehicles do catch fire after an accident, they definitely don't explode. Okay. And you'd know if a vehicle was catching fire because there would be flames.
Sure.
So unless you see flames, don't move anyone.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, and also obviously these things are all mostly up to the first person who arrives there who knows what they're doing in terms of the category of first responders. Because most people panic in a situation like this. They're not thinking sensibly. But when you talk about moving, putting the triangle out and all that stuff, what I've found is mostly people love an accident, right? This is something macabre and sick about humanity, but even on the opposite side of the highway, if there's an accident on the other side that you're not involved with, people slow down, which is good.
Rubbernecking.
But they slow down for whatever sick reason they might. They might actually be concerned.
Sadists.
Or they might just, they might want to watch a bit of a show.
I don't know. It's a bit of, it's human nature, and it's even beyond human nature.
Curiosity.
You wouldn't see a herd of elephants walking past another herd where there was a dead elephant and not slowing down or going to mourn with them all.
For whatever reason, I think people mostly are conscientious about, slowing down where there's an accident, paying attention to the traffic around them. Is that a fair assessment or is that completely wrong? People put on their hazard lights. A lot of people pull over. If you have any kind of medical training, should you stop and help?
If you believe that there's no one rendering aid and you think that you can help, then yes. It's worth stopping and at least asking the question. If there is already someone rendering aid and you don't feel that you're needed, then move along, because that sort of congestion does lead to a lot more confusion. There's already two or three cars that have been involved in the accident that are in the roadway. Now you're going to stop your car. Yeah. You're going to cause more congestion. And unfortunately, you hit the nail on the head earlier. It is very macabre, very odd sense of voyeurism, if you ask me. 10 years ago, we saw a lot of people stopping and asking to help. But with the quality of cameras that go into phones these days, it literally would blow your mind. While you are treating a patient, you stop and look up, and there will literally be 6, 7, 8 people all standing around with their cell phones out.
Filming it.
And literally filming another person dying, and it is the sickest thing ever and the most frustrating thing ever to see.
These people need Netflix.
Yeah.
Because they don't. Obviously their own lives are so boring and so awful that they're watching other people's real-life drama and creating content. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's stuff
that
I
get very annoyed.
It's extremely frustrating. If there's not personal belongings being stolen on the scene, there's someone else taking photos or making a video recording of what's happening. It's not even. It goes beyond Netflix. It's stuff that you would expect to see on the dark web. It's very disturbing.
Right.
a very sad indication of society's what society considers normal these days.
So let's just talk about what the South African Private Ambulance and Emergency Services Association is. It's a non-profit member organization, right?
That's correct. So essentially what we are is we are a member organization, a voluntary member organization for ambulance services that meet certain standards and criteria within the industry. So for somebody who is looking to see if an ambulance service is reputable or not, typically, whether it be in the ambulance industry or a number of other industries, you would look for a service provider that is a member of a quality body within that industry, and that's what we do within the ambulance space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've got another question here for you. If you are involved in a car crash, right, and you do not have medical aid and you're badly injured, can ambulance service company refuse to assist you?
As a short answer, no. If the ambulance service is actually on scene, their staff have arrived and they are available to immediately assist you. According to the National Health Act, no person may be denied treatment in an emergency medical situation, regardless of their circumstances, whether it be economic, social, whatever the case is, no person may be denied treatment. So if an ambulance service is on scene and if they have staff available to assist you, if you are suffering from some sort of life or limb threatening situation, they must by law assist you.
Okay, 100%.
Vaynant, can I ask you something? Because with what you guys do in insurance and obviously having all these clients, you must have access to a huge amount of information and data around accidents, what happens and how things can go wrong. What advice would you give to people? Because if we just have a snapshot of what we should be thinking about, what we should be doing in the case of an accident, whether or not someone's injured, it might help us to, in that moment of stress and panic, figure out what important points we have to cover in order to get out of this with a minimum of trouble.
Yeah. So Gareth, you know, what I always focus on is when you get the opportunity to give advice is, you know, how to avoid first getting into that circumstances. And if we go and look at what's actually causing these accidents and what is actually the threat for us on the road, it's the normal thing that you have to do to make sure that your car is first in a roadworthy condition.
Right.
Now, I don't know you guys now, but I must admit this morning, I don't check my tires every time before I get into the car. No. You know, I do it if I go on a long trip with the kids in the car.
Sure.
Then I stick my hand in there and I feel if there's any damage to the tire. And I actually found on the inside a cut on a tire before, which was a hell of a surprise for me.
Sure.
So do we ever do things like that? How often do you have your tires checked? You know, it's suddenly raining like it did now the previous few days. How many accidents are caused by vehicles aquaplaning?
Yep.
Because those tires are just not in a roadworthy condition anymore. So what do we do up front to make sure, you know, that you can avoid things like this?
And then, of course, people have got to just use their brains. It's like cell phones.
Oh.
I wonder how many accidents, you must know, how many accidents are caused just by people looking at WhatsApp or watching a YouTube video while they're driving. I've seen people driving fast on the highway. And you go past them and you look and they've got their screen in front of their eyes.
So yeah. we were lately on this thing with getting vehicles a cell phone free zone.
Yeah.
Because it was the International Transport Forum. Mm-hmm. In 2017, their annual report reported on our high statistics, which is not a surprise for us on accidents. But then if you look at, they then said, okay, more or less 25% of those accidents are caused by cell phones. And I thought to myself, okay, but how accurate can that be? So someone else in the country made use of an application that shows afterwards on that moment of impact was the activity on the phone. They came out to 25%. So if you just think about it, in 2017 already, accidents costed the country 143 billion rand. And 25% of that, because we do. You were talking about how stupid we can be on the scene of an accident. Mm. How stupid are you
in your car
to look, to send a WhatsApp to peep what's going on there? And I mean, all of us have done it in the past. If we can get rid of that kind of thing, you know, we can already save such a lot of lives.
So, Oliver, when people are in an accident, they immediately think, oh my God, you know, medical aid, am I covered? Are these people going to help me? You've already said you can't deny assistance to someone. But there are obviously also, people have to take precautions. People have to make sure that they
are covered for certain things. Is there any general and broad advice you can give to people so that if they end up in this situation, they can at least have peace of mind that they're not going to be shunted around and left for dead and sent off to a hospital that they don't necessarily want to end up in?
Certainly. There's a couple of things. Number one, I'd say always try to make yourself aware of who's available in your area. If you live in a specific city, if you live in a specific suburb, which ambulance service do you see on a regular basis driving around your area? That's probably somebody that has a base or an operation in your suburb. Make sure that the telephone number for that ambulance service is on your phone and you know where to find it in the event of an emergency. We always try to drum home that you should always be prepared. And unfortunately, a lot of people are very lax with this sort of thing. They just leave it till the last minute, and then it's I'm going to phone 112 and just hope that whichever service provider I get put through to is decent. Make yourself aware. If your house catches fire, how many people in this room right now would have the telephone number for the local fire department on their phone? Very, very few. I have it. Purely because need to phone the fire and rescue services at motor vehicle accidents. But a lot of people don't have those numbers available to them. So it's all about being prepared at the end of the day. And then secondly, try and make sure that you do have some sort of insurance cover in place. Traditionally, what was known as an insurance or a hospital insurance product, those types of products are now moving across to what is being referred to as a low-cost benefit medical aid scheme. Mm-hmm. That's a transition that's currently in place, specifically because there were laws and regulations that governed how medical aids operated, but not how medical insurance policies operated, which meant that they could exclude a lot more and people got less cover than they were expecting. But even if you go for a very basic hospital cover option on a medical aid scheme that is more affordable for your families, please, please try and make sure that you're prepared, because you never realize how bad a lot of hospitals are and a lot of people, until they see it for themselves, simply would not believe how poorly a lot of our hospitals operate. And if you don't have medical aid cover, you're not getting a private hospital. Unfortunately, the ambulance service will treat you on scene regardless of whether you have medical aid or not. But they will then take you to the closest appropriate hospital. And if you're not on medical aid, you're going to go to a government hospital. And a lot of those facilities are simply way overburdened. So you're going to wait. And when you wait in an emergency situation, it's detrimental to your health. It really is amazing how many times we go to an accident scene and someone's driving a brand new VW Golf GTI or a very nice BMW 3 Series, but the car's not insured and they have no medical aid, and it's all about social perception. But when the brown stuff hits the fan, you need some sort of cover behind you.
Look, touching on that as well, obviously some specific medical aids, they govern which ambulance services you are able or you're allowed to use to actually be transported to specific hospitals. Do you think that people should actually contact their medical aid and find out all that information and keep those specific ambulance services on their phone?
Absolutely. So we are seeing a shift. Mm. Historically, some medical aid schemes would contract with only one ambulance service. That obviously automatically means that the scheme members on that specific medical aid have a very limited choice in which ambulance service to use. Mm. If they don't have an ambulance in your area when you're having an emergency, you're in trouble. So some of the better medical aid schemes, or a lot of the better medical aid schemes in South Africa, are now moving towards what we refer to as an open network of ambulance service providers, which means there's a large variety of ambulance service providers available. If you phone the emergency medical number for your medical aid scheme, they will dispatch the closest ambulance service provider to you. But then again, there are still, I'd say, quite a few medical aids that are putting cost before the priority of their members' health. Mm-hmm. They are literally going for the cheapest ambulance service quote on a year-to-year basis.
Yeah.
They're limiting their pool of ambulance service providers to maybe one or two ambulance service providers across the country. And that means that if you're a member on one of those schemes, there's a good chance you're going to wait anywhere from half an hour to 2 hours for a private ambulance to arrive.
Crazy.
And to someone who's paying
2 hours,
for,
you're dead.
Absolutely. For someone who's expecting private healthcare and paying for private health healthcare cover. It's absolutely unacceptable. So it is worth looking into and looking into what sort of cover your medical scheme offers you, whether they're giving you some sort of comprehensive cover for all disciplines of medical services. And if they're not, you need to start asking your scheme and sending them an email or making a telephone call and saying, listen, guys, we can see that something's off here. Why are you limiting us to one ambulance service? What's going on in the background?
Mm-hmm. Gareth, another thing that's equally important for me is make sure that your short-term insurance include this medical assistance on the scene of an accident.
Right.
Because that's not normally just included. And, you're talking about fire brigade costs. Do you know it can be hundreds of thousands if your house is on fire to get those guys out? Is that included in your short-term insurance? So if it's not, then make another few calls today and find out, you know, we included, King Price included for our clients, and if it's not, it can lead to big costs.
Yeah, I
hadn't thought of that.
Sure. It's bad enough your house is burning down and you don't know that you
got a big ass bill to cover.
Terrible.
Another question, Oliver. Obviously, some of us who are in the know, we kind of know that some ambulance services and some companies are, you know, obviously working hand in hand with some other questionable services. As a patient, are you able to refuse for a specific ambulance service to give you cover?
Absolutely. Not only ambulance services, but we refer to what's known in South Africa as the patient's rights charter. And one of the conditions in the patient's rights charter is that any patient, has a right to choose their own healthcare provider. Mm. So that means you get to choose which doctor you want to see, you get to choose which hospital you want to go to, you get to choose which ambulance service assists you at a scene. So if you are at an accident and three or four different ambulance services arrive and perhaps you feel a bit overwhelmed, you're not sure what to do, but you recognize one ambulance service and according to your knowledge or what you've heard, that specific ambulance service is a better ambulance service, but perhaps the paramedics are standing in the background because another ambulance service that you're not familiar with is attending to you, sometimes very well, other times unfortunately not so well. Mm. If you don't feel confident in the care that you're receiving, you have the right to tell those paramedics that are assisting you at the time, listen, I'm sorry, I'm not comfortable with the care that I'm receiving. Please step aside. I want the paramedics that are standing in the back there or the paramedics from that ambulance service over there. Those are the gents or ladies and gents that I want to assist me today.
Yeah, Leanne would be particular like that. Mm. She would ask for particular paramedics.
Yeah, well.
Good looking guy.
Maybe. No, actually just somebody who knows what they're doing would be great at this point.
Mm. Well, obviously, I mean, yeah, like you say, you've got to make the best of a bad situation, I suppose.
Sure. Obviously, you were a paramedic back in the day, once upon a time. What's one of the most dodgy situations you've come across?
Jeez, paramedics have a tough time, man.
Yeah,
paramedics have a different psychology, I think.
Yeah, you have to learn to put up emotional boundaries to a certain extent. Otherwise, you're just going to get completely overwhelmed. Dodgy, a couple of examples. I think majority of the guys, one of the most commonly heard complaints is that it's particularly difficult to deal with any sort of traumatic scene where kids are involved. Mm-hmm. I think that always tugs at the heartstrings, unfortunately.
Sure.
No one expects a life to be taken at a very young age, so it's always unexpected for us. Then in South Africa, I think one of the things that we discussed earlier, just the lack of empathy that people show. You know, you'll arrive at a taxi accident and there can be anywhere up to 17, 18 people involved or injured in a taxi accident if that vehicle is overloaded. The issue there is that you arrive as the first ambulance with a crew of two people and you now need to start prioritizing which of these 18 patients are going to get care until more ambulances arrive.
Sure.
Now, it would be lovely if there were bystanders who could come and help you and you could give them a pair of gloves and they could at least hold a bandage in place or hold someone's hand and give them a bit of reassurance or make sure that other people are not stealing people's personal belongings from the scene. Exactly. Yeah. Everybody is satisfying their own need for gratification rather than actually being empathetic and helping their fellow man. And I think from a social concern point of view, that's one of the things that irritates me the most, is just this complete lack of any empathy or care for our fellow man these days.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness there are people like you out there doing this stuff. And thank you very much for joining us this morning. So that's Oliver Wright, the CEO of the South African Private Ambulance and Emergency Services Association. Also to Pig Spotter, Cliff Pinto, and Vaynon van Vieren from King Price. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Very, very good. Awesome. There will be one more episode of this terrific new feature, which I think is helping a lot of people to understand what exactly you should and shouldn't know, what you should and shouldn't do on the road, because we're all such geniuses until it happens to us, right?
Yeah.
So this is where you can fill yourself
being prepared in. Is better.
There we go. Smart driving with Pig Spotter this morning. CliffCentral.com. It's brought to you by King Price Insurance. Thank you very much, gents. All right, we'll come back with some more news and all the stuff you need to know this morning and lots of other exciting things, including a guest who's going to pop by and tell us about a poaching ring that he uncovered that involved Grace Mugabe. How's that?
Oh, dear.
Yes, ooh, dear is right. So loads of stuff that we want to talk to you about and that you can get in on. All of that's coming up now, cliffcentral.com. What's on your agenda, Leanne Moll? You always have a ton of stuff on your agenda.
Yeah, I've got some quite shocking stories. For instance, a woman who lived for 99 years with her organs in all the wrong places and never knew it until she became a cadaver.
Well.
And then she still didn't know it.
That's exciting.
But a whole lot of medical students did.
Wow. She had no idea. Organs were all in the wrong places.
She lived to the ripe old age of 99. Ripe old rage.
My God. All right, there's some strange stuff in the world. All right, thank you very much. We'll be back in a moment or two with that and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com. It is Tuesday, the 9th of February.
April.
What do I have? February. Jesus.
Right, having a challenge.
My God, I'm having a challenge. Yeah.
This is CliffCentral.com.